The Word of Mouth podcast is brought to you by
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community.
With convenient locations throughout northern New England,
world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more.
Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
Word of Mouth.
Word of Mouth.
Word of Mouth.
Word of Mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. The annual car inspection. For longtime Granite Staters, it is an inconvenient rite of passage. For out-of-state transplants, it can be surprising and an expensive lesson in New Hampshire's, shall we say, unique state regulatory structure.
I found it a little weird that I had to do that every year, but I'm not used to that where I'm from out in the West Coast, so it was just a different new experience.
Some of the mechanics in the garages, they either A, too picky, or B, they want to take the customer for a ride.
It has brought to my attention several things that I needed with my vehicle that I was unaware of.
And this leads us to a question we received from a listener.
Why do we put up with the onerous yearly auto inspection? Half of the states, including California, don't have it, and their accident rate isn't high.
Well, we have had our crack investigative team on the case, and here with some answers is NHPR reporter Casey McDermott. Hello, Casey.
Hi, Virginia.
So first off, our questioner wanted to remain anonymous, so we're going to respect his slash her privacy.
Correct.
Okay. You've been digging into this question for quite a while.
Yeah. So we received this back in January. I started reporting it in March after it was selected as the most popular question for us to investigate. So it's been several months now.
So there you are, a one-woman spotlight team. I'm kind of imagining you in a basement digging into DMV files.
Well, not quite. And to be fair, I was working on other things. But the question was actually surprisingly tricky to answer.
All right, let's refresh the question. Why do we put up with the onerous yearly auto inspection? Half of the states, including California, don't have it, and their accident rate is not high. So what did you find out for answers?
So first off, we should point out that his numbers are actually slightly off. It's more than half of U.S. states that don't have it. And that number has been dwindling over the last few decades.
So it's not a national standard. Each state does it their own way?
Yep. Each state approaches inspections differently. In New Hampshire, the DMV oversees the process, but the inspections themselves are performed by mechanics at large chain stores, car dealers, family repair shops, and other licensed stations across the state. And my reporting brought me to one of those.
All right, take it away, our automotive inspection gumshoe.
We start our inspection when we bring it in the door, looking at lights and wipers and body and stuff like that. And we just have a whole process that we go through from.
Dan Weed, owner of Weed Automotive in Concord, has been in the auto business for decades.
Of course, people are going to say, I've got a jaded perspective because, all right, we do this for a living, but we do it for the benefit of the customer more than anything.
He says these annual checks ensure regular car maintenance, which saves drivers money in the long run and helps prevent accidents.
What we see every day for safety stuff would boggle your mind sometimes.
And Dan Weed isn't the only mechanic seeing safety violations. Pete McNamara with the New Hampshire Auto Dealers Association points to this data from the state. More than 75,000 cars fail each year for faulty brakes alone.
When I say failed is that they have less than a penny's thickness when it comes to brake pad left.
So why do Granite Staters put up with the onerous yearly auto inspection? Safety. Sounds reasonable. But that's the perspective of people in the auto industry. The state DMV actually runs the program. And what's their reasoning? Well, I tried to get an explanation from them.
Yep.
And tried again.
Sure. My name's Michael Todd. I'm the Public Information Officer with the New Hampshire Department of Safety. It's M-I-C-H-A-E-L. And I'm here today to talk about vehicle safety inspections.
Now, to be clear, this wasn't a two-way conversation. When I inquired about New Hampshire's annual inspection requirement, the DMV wouldn't make anyone available for an interview. They did, however, offer to read me a prepared statement over the phone.
You said that you have a statement that you're...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I'm just going to talk about the vehicle safety inspections for a minute here. The vehicle safety inspections are incredibly important. The required annual state safety inspections help to keep New Hampshire's roadways safer for residents. And
but
for visitors.
They wouldn't answer follow-up questions on tape.
Okay. And just to reiterate, you guys are not open to additional follow-up questions on that?
That's it.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you so much.
The DMV did answer some of my questions via email. They said yearly inspections are about safety. And in a place like New Hampshire, where harsh winters can do a number on a car, regular check-ins ensure safer driving conditions. But what about money? You know those little inspection stickers you put on your front windshield? Well, licensed inspection stations buy those from the state. Last year alone, that brought in more than $4 million. Most of that money goes to the state highway fund. Some of it goes to fight air pollution, and some of it just goes back to the general fund. If the inspections weren't yearly, the DMV said, hypothetically, the state would lose money. But they didn't say revenue is the actual reason for New Hampshire's car inspection requirement. And the source of all of this dates back to a law. A law first passed in 1931. As it turns out, New Hampshire's not the only state whose inspection requirements date back to a time when people were still getting used to the whole car ownership thing, period.
Many of the states that still have it are some of the founding fathers.
That's Susan Fleming with the Government Accountability Office. They study questions about how government is working. A few years ago, she worked on a report about state inspection programs around the country. Her team analyzed studies, looked at crash data, talked to officials in all of the states that require annual inspections. Well, all except for New Hampshire.
So we contacted them multiple times, gosh, I think three, four, five times to interview them for our report. But, you know, they weren't returning our calls, so we were just not able to schedule the interview before our report was issued.
Sound familiar? In any case, after all their research, the GAO's findings about safety were inconclusive.
It's pretty challenging to identify a causal link between these vehicle inspection programs and safety outcomes using available accident data.
There have been attempts to change New Hampshire's inspection laws. In the last decade, a number of bills have been filed to move it to every other year, but none of those made it very far. So you'll still have to get your car inspected, for now. The DMV does play a watchdog role, inspecting the inspection stations too. But that's where I still have questions for them. How does that work? How do they decide what to look into? Dan Weed, back at the auto shop in Concord, says customers should feel empowered knowing they do have choices.
If there's any question, get a second opinion. You know, nobody likes to spend extra money, but for the price of an inspection, you can go to shop A and they can tell you it needs brakes and tires and ball joints, and you can go to shop B and it might be lights and exhaust and something else.
And if you still have questions, you could call the DMV's public hotline. Maybe you'll have more luck than I did.
Terrific work, Casey. Are you feeling good about your next inspection?
More informed, definitely.
Casey, thank you so much for your thorough and time-consuming investigation.
You're welcome.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott, here with Jimmy Gutierrez, who apparently has something to tell me.
Hey, V.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How's your summer been?
You know, I've had a fantastic summer, and I cannot believe it's almost August.
You're a New Hampshire native, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of something called the Red Barn Speaker Series?
I've heard of a lot of things going on in Red Barns in New Hampshire. Not sure about the speaker series, but I'm thinking, is this the Audubon thing?
That's correct. This is the Audubon thing. It happens in Hebron, New Hampshire, at the Red Barn, not surprisingly, every summer, Tuesday evenings. And these are talks and presentations by authors, biologists, pretty much just trying to bring nature to life.
So I'm thinking the Something Wild guys kind of thing?
Exactly. In the flesh. There's one that caught my eye. It's coming up August 1st. It's a presentation called Animals with Bad Reputations.
So the animals that hang around on street corners and smoke right. cigarettes.
Right. Animals with PR issues. So that got me thinking, what animals does Virginia Prescott think have bad reputations?
Well, first of all, this is such a Jimmy Gutierrez thing. You know, finds the person who's misrepresented on the outside and try and figure out what they're all about, kind of reform them. So right up your street, first
right,
of all.
Right.
I hate snakes. I'm afraid of snakes. I hate rats. Also, I think squirrels are overrated. I think they're like rats with a better outfit.
Ooh.
Not a fan of squirrels. Well, you know.
My neighborhood is overrun with squirrels,
well,
too.
Well, that's part of the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, skunks. Who wants to run into a skunk? I mean, I know people who've been sprayed by skunks and have been so traumatized by it. So I'm afraid of crossing a skunk.
All right. So maybe this is a good idea then. Maybe some wrongs can be righted here with this with this presentation.
Well, Jimmy, if anybody can find the salvageable reputation, I really trust you to do it.
All right, thanks, V.
Go to it.
Step one, getting in touch with the person that's trying to flip the script on animals with bad reputations.
That one is really popular because people sort of like to learn about these animals that could be potentially sort of dangerous or annoying or in some ways in conflict with people.
That's Margaret Gillespie. She works at the Squam Lake Science Center as a naturalist. And what exactly is a naturalist, you may ask?
At the Science Center, we're the educators, but we've also studied and just spend a lot of our time exploring in the natural world. And it's kind of a combination of studying nature and education.
She says that lots of animals have bad raps because we don't know enough about them. And if we saw them up close, it could make all the difference.
Sometimes these animals are doing some really useful things for people that they don't realize. Once people take a few steps on their own, then it's a lot easier to get along with these animals and appreciate them more.
Margaret points to bats, skunks, even porcupines as animals that have been unfairly written off. Even as her own dog has been quilled by a porcupine. Bad reputation is usually this kind of like subjective thing. But as a naturalist and being subjective on this, aren't you required to think fondly of all animals? Are you a little too close to this?
when you start to dig a little bit deeper, it's not just the surface, like my dog got porcupine quills. It's kind of how that animal fits into the natural world and how it makes habitat for other kinds of animals.
What animals, when we think of them, are kind of overrated? What animals get too much love?
Well, unfortunately, there seems to be some sort of conflict with most animals that are out there.
While that may be true, I called Margaret up with one specific animal in mind. An animal with such a bad rap, I could never imagine anyone wanting to meet it in person. An animal only a naturalist could love. All of this has been driving at one question, one surprise question that you were not aware of. Are ticks the worst?
Well, certainly, ticks are not on the top of my list, for sure. And the fact that ticks carry some pretty nasty diseases, and they've really kind of changed the way people explore the natural world.
Margaret says, in so many words, that ticks suck, but they do play a role, however small, in the natural world. And there are precautions people can take to stay safe, like wearing light-colored clothes, tucking pants into socks, and giving yourself tick checks after spending time outside.
It really has changed our mentality of you know, just being out in the outdoors and enjoying freely. We still can do that, but we need to check for ticks. They're just so sneaky, and the consequences are not good.
One of the worst outcomes of a bite? Lyme disease, the tick-borne illness that, along with a list of other symptoms, can present like the flu. And guess who has Lyme? Margaret's dog. The life of a naturalist's companion, I tell ya. But after talking with Margaret, two people popped into my mind that I needed to talk to about this. I want to say it's felt like it's been a pretty beautiful summer so far. How have you guys been doing?
Well, it would have been beautiful until we caught a terrible disease.
This is producer Hannah McCarthy, and along with senior producer Taylor Quimby,
and I also got sick,
they make up one quarter of our production team here. And this summer, both of them have been diagnosed with Lyme disease.
I was actually up in Livermore, New Hampshire, reporting on a story for Word of Mouth when I went tramping through the woods. And then I would say like 3 weeks after that, I started to feel kind of sick.
I'm not sure where I got mine, but you know, it doesn't seem to matter.
I mean, it takes all sorts.
Yeah, you can get Lyme wherever you want.
Did you get the spooky ghost rash, too?
I did.
So I got a rash later, and I call it a spooky ghost rash because I thought it was hallucinating. This bullseye rash showed up on one part of my leg and then faded away and showed up on another part of my leg.
I ended up with, like, probably a dozen ghost rashes all at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I broke out, like, one day, I broke out with a ton of rashes.
Oh. The more Hannah and Taylor talked, the more curious I became. And from the sounds of it, while the symptoms of Lyme are all over the board, they all sound equally terrible.
High fever.
Fatigue.
Really, really bad aches and chills.
Really, really gross night sweats.
Night sweats were so gross. Soaking the sheets.
So gross.
Muscle pain, like I had worked out super hard, even though I hadn't done jack.
Joint pain, specifically for me in my knees, but like I was running downhill forever.
I don't know if this was fever, but I had this sort of like out-of-body brain experience where I felt like like my head was a water balloon and it was like floating away from me.
All right, that's a good one. I had a weird brain fog.
Both Hannah and Taylor were diagnosed with Lyme, even though both didn't take a test to confirm it. That's because the tests that we use to confirm Lyme disease are incredibly ineffective. Think 30% accuracy. The best confirmation of the disease is the mysterious bullseye rash. It can also be near impossible to spot some of these invading insects.
A deer tick nymph, which is one of the sort of most likely passers of Lyme disease, culprits, they are about the size or smaller than a period at the end of a sentence in a book or a novel.
So much for trusting that tick check. But it does beg one question. Are ticks the worst?
I'm going to say absolutely. I see no redeeming quality in a tick.
I mean, I like the idea that everything in nature has a place. I don't know what ticks are supposed to do, except for the possibility that this is what they're supposed to do, and we just don't, that we're part of a bigger balancing problem with the world, and we're just the victims of it.
Once a person gets Lyme, it may never go away. There's late-stage Lyme and post-treatment Lyme, and you can even get Lyme again. Within the medical community, there's a whole discussion happening right now around how much is not known about the disease.
You should be super paranoid about Lyme disease. That's my takeaway from this. Like, I always thought of it as like, I'm good. I do the tick check.
I think the takeaway is that, like, we have a lot to learn. And I'm no scientist, so I'm not going to be the one who's spending the rest of my life researching this. But I really hope that there are a lot of people who are turning their attention right now to tick-borne illnesses.
Is there someone that we could talk to that you think would be a good person to answer this question? Are ticks the worst?
Well, Sam might be good. I feel like if anybody could defend a tick, which, you know, I don't know, this is public radio, so we need to make sure we get all sides. So maybe Sam can defend ticks.
Surprisingly, Hannah and Taylor both had at least something nice to say about ticks. But if there's one person that can give a balanced, neutral take on this topic, it's NHPR's Sam Evans Brown. Sam's the host of the station's podcast Outside In, a show that explores the natural world and how we use it. He's also an environment and energy zealot that spends way too much time on green Twitter. So I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Are ticks the worst?
They're the worst. They're worse than anything that takes blood out of your body. Leeches are better than ticks. Mosquitoes, black flies, all those things better than ticks.
Okay, so that didn't take long at all to get to the heart of that. Do you think that ticks have a bad reputation?
They have a bad reputation. It is deserved. It is a deserved bad reputation. You know, I'd be open to being convinced otherwise. But I'm ready to say that there should be fewer of them on a landscape scale. I'm not quite ready to say we should eradicate them entirely, but I'm almost ready to go there.
Would you believe that Taylor and Hannah actually had nice things to say about them even after they've been diagnosed with Lyme disease?
They're fools. Well, the Lyme disease gets into your brain. It makes you like them. That's what happened there.
Okay.
Yeah, they've been brainwashed.
So here's what we know. Always perform a tick check. Wear proper clothing in the proper way. You can use spray, but even that doesn't guarantee a thing. But at least it can't get worse, right?
I mean, it's already getting worse. We've got like random new ticks that didn't even exist in New England working their way in. The Lone Star tick.
You should be in Texas.
I don't know if that's where you should be, but I shouldn't be here.
Sam says ticks are coming up further north to places that used to be too cold and too snowy for ticks, but that's just not the case anymore. They're even taking out moose. So as far as animals with bad raps go, this is one animal that's done everything to deserve theirs.
Sam Evans-Brown, host of our Outside In podcast with Jimmy Gutierrez, who is a producer for our creative unit. Not really redeeming the reputation of ticks, but we do want to tell you about the Red Barn Speaker Series, Animals with Bad Reputations. That is Tuesday night, August 1st at 7 o'clock. For more information, go to wordofmouthradio.org.